Life Sketches. Chapter 40. A View of the Judgment. On the morning of October 23, 1879, about 2 o'clock, the Spirit of the Lord rested upon me, and I beheld scenes in the coming judgment. Language fails me in which to give an adequate description of the things which passed before me, and of the effect they had upon my mind. The great day of the execution of God's judgment seemed to have come. 10,000 times 10,000 were assembled before a large throne, upon which was seated a person of majestic appearance. Several books were before him, and upon the covers of each was written in letters of gold, which seemed like a burning flame of fire, "Ledger of Heaven." One of these books, containing the names of those who claimed to believe the truth, was then opened. Immediately I lost sight of the countless millions about the throne, and only those who were professedly children of the light and of the truth engaged my attention. As these persons were named, one by one, and their good deeds mentioned, their countenances would light up with a holy joy that was reflected in every direction. But this did not seem to rest upon my mind with the greatest force. Another book was opened, wherein were recorded the sins of those who professed the truth. Under the general heading of selfishness came every other sin. There were also headings over every column, and underneath these, opposite each name, were recorded, in their respective columns, the lesser sins. Under covetousness came falsehood, theft, robbery, fraud, and avarice. Under ambition came pride and extravagance. Jealousy stood at the head of malice, envy, and hatred, and intemperance headed a long list of fearful crimes, such as lasciviousness, adultery, indulgence of animal passions, etc. As I beheld, I was filled with inexpressible anguish, and exclaimed, "Who can be saved? Who will stand justified before God? Whose robes are spotless? Who are faultless in the sight of a pure and holy God?" As the Holy One upon the throne slowly turned the leaves of the ledger, and his eyes rested for a moment upon individuals, his glance seemed to burn into their very souls, and at the same moment every word and action of their lives passed before their minds as clearly as though traced before their vision in letters of fire. Trembling seized them, and their faces turned pale. One class were registered as cumberers of the ground. As the piercing eye of the judge rested upon these, their sins of neglect were distinctly revealed. With pale, quivering lips they acknowledged that they had been traitors to their holy trust. They had had warnings and privileges, but they had not heeded nor improved upon them. They could now see that they had presumed too much upon the mercy of God. The names of all who professed the truth were mentioned. Upon one page of the ledger, under the head of fidelity, was the name of my husband. His life, character, and all the incidents in our experience seemed to be brought vividly before my mind. A very few items which impressed me, I will mention. I was shown that God had qualified my husband for a specific work, and in his providence had united us to carry forward this work. Through the testimonies of his Spirit, he had imparted to him great light. He had cautioned, warned, reproved, and encouraged, and it was due to the power of his grace that we had been enabled to bear a part in the work from its very commencement. God had miraculously preserved his mental faculties, notwithstanding his physical powers had given out again and again. God should have the glory for the unbending integrity and noble courage to vindicate the right and condemn the wrong which my husband has had. Just such firmness and decision were necessary at the commencement of the work, and they have been needed all along, as it progressed step by step. He has stood in defense of the truth without yielding a single principle to please the best friend. He has had an ardent temperament, bold and fearless in acting and speaking. This has often led him into difficulties which he might frequently have avoided. He has been obliged to stand more firmly, to be more decided, to speak more earnestly and boldly, because of the very different temperament of the men connected with him in his labor. God has given him the power to form and execute plans with the needed firmness, because he did not refuse to exercise these qualities of the mind, and to venture in order to advance the work of God. Self has at times been mingled with the work, but when the Holy Spirit has controlled his mind, he has been a most successful instrument in the hands of God for the upbuilding of his cause. He has had elevated views of the Lord's claims upon all who profess his name, of their duty to stand in defense of the widow and the fatherless, to be kind to the poor, to help the needy. He would jealously guard the interests of his brethren, that no unjust advantage should be taken of them. The earnest efforts of my husband to build up the institutions in our midst I also saw registered in the ledger of heaven. The truth sent out from the press was like rays of light emanating from the sun in all directions. This work was commenced and carried forward at a great sacrifice of strength and means. Times of test and trial. When affliction came upon my husband, other men were selected to take his place. They commenced with a good purpose, but they had never learned the lesson of self-denial. Had they felt the necessity of earnestly agonizing before God daily, and thrown their souls unselfishly into the work, not depending upon self, but upon the wisdom of God, they would have shown that their works were wrought in God. Had they heeded the reproofs and counsels given, when they did not meet the mind of the Spirit of God, they would have been saved from sin. A man who is honest before God will deal justly with his fellow men, whether or not it is for his own personal interest to do so. The outward acts are a fair transcript of the principles within. Many whom God called to his work have been tested and proved, and there are others whom he is now testing and proving. After God had tested and proved us in the furnace of affliction, he raised up my husband and gave him greater clearness of mind and power of intellect to plan and execute than he had before his affliction. When my husband felt his own weakness and moved in the fear of God, then the Lord was his strength. Prompt in speech and action, he has pushed forward reforms where they would otherwise have languished. He has made very liberal donations, fearing that his means would prove a snare to him, a call for burden bearers. While God has given us our work to do in bearing our testimony to the people by pen and voice, others must come to bear burdens in connection with the cause. They should not become discouraged, but should endeavor to learn by every apparent failure how to make a success of the next effort. And if they connect with the source of wisdom, they will surely succeed. God is putting burdens upon more inexperienced shoulders. He is fitting them to be caretaking, to venture, to run risks. All who have responsible positions must realize that they must first have power with God, in order that they may have power with the people. Those who devise and execute plans for our institutions must connect with heaven, if they would have wisdom, foresight, discernment, and keen perception. The Lord is left out of the question altogether too much, when everything depends upon his blessing. God listens to the appeals of his self-denying workers who labor to advance his cause. He has even condescended to talk with feeble mortals, face to face. The close intercourse which Moses had with God, and the glorious manifestation vouchsafed to him, caused his face to shine so brightly with heavenly luster that the people of Israel could not look upon him. He appeared like a bright angel from heaven. This personal experience of the knowledge of God was of more value to him as a man bearing responsibilities as a leader than all his former education in the learning of the Egyptians. The most brilliant intellect, the most earnest study, the highest eloquence, can never be substituted for the wisdom and power of God in those who are bearing the responsibilities connected with his cause. Nothing can be substituted for the grace of Christ and the knowledge of God's will. God has made every provision for man to have help which he alone can give him. If he allows his work to hurry, drive, and confuse, so that he has no time for devotional thought or for prayer, he will make mistakes. If a standard is not lifted up by Jesus Christ against Satan, the enemy will overcome those who are engaged in the important work for this time. It is the privilege of everyone connected with our denominational institutions to be connected in close relationship with God. And if they fail to do this, they show themselves unfitted for their work of trust. The provision made for us all through Christ was a full and perfect sacrifice, a sinless offering. His blood can cleanse the foulest stain. Had he been but a man, we would be excusable for our lack of faith and obedience. He came to save that which was lost. We are not qualified for the great work for this time, except when we labor in God, when our prayers, earnest and fervent, are continually ascending to the throne of grace. God is fitting up men to bear burdens, to plan and execute, and my husband must not stand in the way. He cannot encircle the cause of God in his arms. It is too broad. Many heads and many hands are needed to plan and labor, not saving themselves. For want of experience, mistakes will be made. But if the workers connect with God, he will give them an increase of wisdom. Never since the creation of the world were such important interests at stake as now depend upon the action of men who believe and are giving the last message of warning to the world.